you should be subscribed to. Who of you is not subscribed to that mailing list? Okay. So if you subscribe to that mailing list, you could learn such interesting things like the IP address of the LRoot name server changes as of November 1st, and other interesting things. So you're encouraged to go there. As Jaap mentioned yesterday, we are three of us, so none of us is guilty of anything. It's Jaap over there. It's Jim, who is probably not with us today's morning because he has to attend the other working group session wearing one of his other heavy hats. And finally, it's me. So this is today's program. We'll have a bunch of presentations. First of all, Paul Kane is giving us an outline of community DNS. We listen to an OARC update by Keith Mitchell. Bind is on the agenda, presented by users of Bind and users of additional features of Bind. Under action L, we'll have a presentation or maybe an experience report regarding V6 Glue with registrars. And last not least, DNSSEC for the Japanese top-level domain. And in the end, if time allows, we'll have a short slot for any other business, general discussion, or throwing tomatoes at the chairs. Okay, that said, I'd like to ask Paul Kane to come forward and give his presentation. And again, I'm Windows impaired.
Thank you. Don't worry, I'll be short and sweet. Well, good morning all, and thanks for inviting me. Obviously, being the first speaker after the AM6 party last night is a bit of a challenge. I'll try and be fairly brief. I'm introducing you to Community DNS. Those of you that the last Write meeting, we've had some good improvements, which I hope to share with you now. So what I propose to do is run through who is Community DNS, what do we do, where do we do it, how do we compare with other providers? Obviously, being the new kids on the block, it'd be good to see how we compare. What are the costs? How to join the community DNS effort? And obviously, more information. As a company, we're based in the UK, but have offices in Japan, where customer support comes from, the 24/7 comes from, and in the US. We were established, it's one of a group of companies, the parent being established in 94. Some of you may know me as a party that runs CCTLD registries. We run the back end to 14 registries, where I'm actually the administrator for four CCTLD registries. We started running our own DNS infrastructure back in 2001 for our customer base. We are relatively new to the Anycast market. We using the same platform, albeit with a few tweaks. Others of you may know us as the folks that created a registrar in a box platform for the GTLDs. So basically, we've been around the space for a while. So where are we now with the Community DNS project? We have a V4 and V6 footprint for Anycast in 12 locations. The map I show is a little out of date. Most are at peering points, primary peering points within nations. We're planning to get to 40 locations by mid-2008. And what we've tried to do is make it very, very easy for ISPs and exchange points to get involved in the Anycast platform. What's different about us than others? We have built the platform from bottom up. We use very low cost hardware, a dual core or a quad core server with about 8 gigs of memory will store about 200 million domains. we've tested, and I'll take you to the test platform, which you're all invited to look at. We've tested to 500 million names, but we're rolling out at 8 gigs for now, simply because the global domain space is about 130 million, and so obviously we have room for growth. Bearing in mind, on the current platform, we only have about 2 million names of customers using us at the moment. Obviously, you guys know it's all about BGP. One thing I say to registries in the room, the information that we hold is secure and is only used for DNS. It's secure to us as a master arrangement, and it's secure and encrypted on each instance of the server. So the registries control the data, and ISPs, if they are taking or are they installing a system, which is basically hardware, it's free to ISPs. So they install the hardware, supply it with bandwidth. We give them the operating system application and obviously encrypted data. This is where we are at the moment. We have other instances. We're in Buenos Aires that's not on. We're in South Africa. But this gives you a general idea. IPv6 is actually active now. This maps is a little out of date. Performance, where are we on that? Each server, because it's fairly lightweight, it's Linux-based, and each server can easily handle 150,000 queries recommend that there are 3 servers in a cluster. It gives us a roundabout after the cluster controller, which takes about 12%, and the slaves to that take about 8% just in overhead and running. We get about 270,000 queries per second from each instance. We do real-time updates, it's about 3 seconds change from the time the master at the registry changes to anywhere in the world. The SLA we provide actually gives us a little extra time, I think it's like 30 seconds, but in reality we do it at about 3 seconds, and we can do 60,000 transaction updates, as it were, per second, or 259.2 million transactions per day, updates per day. Recovery times, there are 2 options, one for the data that's held locally. It takes about 4 seconds for 1 million names. I've forgotten the number, but for the whole 500 million names to reboot, I think it took about an hour. Flapping, some of you may have heard issues with Anycast where the SOAs are out of sync. The way we have done it, we don't have flapping, so the SOAs are always in alignment. And so we can almost guarantee being completely in sync. Because we're new, I thought it would be good actually to look where we are using the DNSMon tool. Many of you may know that tool. This is a service provided by Rype to the community. It's a brilliant service where they have a number of instances around, or checkpoints around the world, that ask DNS queries or to name servers, so you can check the availability of those servers. So some of our customers are already using DNSMon service. This is instance of actually .pl who are using us, and you can see a rough instance here. This is only just, this is not a real comparison, it's a 2-week window. This is taken from the 2nd of October through to, in fact it's a 1-week window, the 8th of October. So this is Afilias, this is Ultra DNS, this is Autonomica. What I would say is do look at the DNSMon tool. It's a great tool going forward. So what are we about? Why are we doing this particular project? The belief is that DDoS attacks are going to increase, and they do tend to originate from the same geographical location. The plan behind this initiative is to try and localize, or more importantly, isolate the DDoS as close to that particular instance from where the attack originates. Our big plan is to have about 200 to 300 instances of zones around the world, so obviously to try and really home it down. Obviously, many of you know about Anycast, but the great thing about Anycast is it does send traffic to the nearest point, nearest server, from a network topology perspective, and therefore, if one is having an attack, there are two approaches to it. One that we don't really support, but some registries have asked that we do support, so it's on a registry-specific basis, and that is to black hole any queries coming, any attacks that are taking place. The other is to answer. We have within the network a reasonable amount of capacity, so we can answer most, well, all queries, but certain registries would prefer to kill a DDoS attack. The disadvantage of killing it is, of course, you kill good traffic as well as the bad traffic. But just the headline on this slide is really to isolate the attack by having an instance of the Anycast close to the source of the attack. So how are we going about it? We are inviting ISPs, registries, the community to take a copy of the platform and to put servers in your own racks. And by doing so, by having multiple servers, we can mitigate the impact of any attack. There are two options there. One is to have that server publicly available. So in other words, to join the public Anycast cloud, in which case that is free. The other, if an ISP is wanting to have the private data, that it, the agreement of the registry is required, but that is also available, but there would be a charge to the ISP for that. So where are we? We're an efficient, well-designed Anycast system to take the majority of the load off registry's DNS traffic. If we take the .pl example, looking at specifics, due to us having multiple servers close to or in primary peering points, we've seen some of the TLD's name servers have their traffic levels reduced by around about 30 to 40%. Well, I've touched on the ISP DNS instances. We want to try and get as many of these servers out as we can. Obviously, from an ISP's perspective, it reduces latency and improves the responsiveness for your customers. We do have currently a copy of the FROOT, which is obviously publicly available. Anyway, we do have a copy of that on the service, and we will be having other root server information coming our way on the platform too in the near future. And the rest of it is self-explanatory. We have been running a test bed, and I want to use that word again, test bed. This is where guys can come and test the platform, see if there are any issues. This is different from the live platform. This is like our experiment sandbox, as it were. You're all invited to play with that environment. We have I think it's 106 TLDs on that platform in a test bed mode. We only have about 36 TLD zones on the live platform. And what tends to happen is registries go to the test bed, play with it, once they're happy with it, then possibly migrate to the live environment, or indeed may just stay in the test environment. Totally on the test bed, we have 106 million domains. I've touched on that. 36 CCTLD zones so far on the platform, approximately equal to 2 million names, so very small, really. How many hits are we getting? Between 36 and 42,000 queries per second currently on the platform. The system isn't even getting out of bed. It's basically still idle. We are trying, obviously, as I've emphasized numerous times, to see a growing number of server locations. For users, they can see per location the amount of traffic that they are receiving. Obviously, the focus of this initiative is to actually be more professional and have SLAs where, certainly in some instances, SLAs are not provided by DNS providers. So enhanced cooperation, it's all about trying to get servers out there. Having bandwidth is only part of the answer, but trying to make sure that we have coordination between registries and ISPs is part of our function. I've already emphasized what's required, but basically a standard server, either quad core or dual core, simply two IP numbers, download the CD. We will verify that there aren't any black holes that you guys have cleverly been able to put in. And then we just basically configure the BGP to talk to your router or give your router information in the normal way. And that's it. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Let's do it this way. Thank you, Paul. Any questions? Joao?
Yes. Fortunately, I was with my laptop open, and the mail came in that shifted my attention from your presentation to there for a second. But so I missed something. But I heard something like fruit in the background.
Right.
Can you repeat that?
Yes. What we have done on the test bed, we have a copy of the fruit available because the fruit is basically open, I believe. And we've put that on for testing purposes as well.
So you have a copy of the root zone, you mean?
The root zone.
Okay.
Yeah.
You basically did an AXFR.
Yeah. That's very easy.
Okay.
But in addition to that, we have two root server providers who are looking to come to us to Anycast theirs, because only some of the root zones are currently Anycast.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Any further questions? Seems not to be the case. Okay, then thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is Keith, giving us an update on OARC, open recursive name servers, and an interesting DNS packet capture tool.
Okay, good morning. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Keith Mitchell. I wanted to give you a brief update on a number of things that we're doing at OARC. Very short overview. I hope that most of you are familiar with OARC now. I then wanted to say a little bit about the root DDoS attack that happened back in February. I have some new analysis on that. A little bit about a new initiative that we're doing with Open Recursive Resolvers. A brief couple of slides on an idea that I had this week, a new tool, and something else that we're doing. What's OARC here for? We're basically here to act as a secure community channel of trust and for DNS operational data, whether that's data gathered off the top-level DNS servers themselves, or whether it is sharing operational coordination when there are particular incidents or initiatives going on. We have interface to the research community so they can do their smart analysis of the data that's gathered off the operational infrastructure and various other outreach functions with other areas. Membership of OARC has been growing steadily. We're just under 50 now. We have 11 of the 13 operators, a lot of CCTL operators, GTLDs, vendors, various other parties. Various services that we operate, public and private websites and mailing lists for DNS operators, whether you're an ORC member or not, gathering data off various top-level servers, collecting that, providing facilities to analyze it. We have a Jabber server for real-time communication. So what we've been doing this year, we had what I thought was a pretty good meeting back in Chicago in the back of the ITF. Lots of presentations and video available at that URL if you're interested. We elected a policy council to give ORC more neutrality and autonomy of ISC so that it's representing the interests of all its members equally. Redrafted the participation agreement a little bit, nothing very exciting in there, just typical governance stuff. And we're having another meeting next week, slightly smaller scale than the Chicago one. It's going to be in the back of the ICANN meeting. That one has a research more than operational flavor to it. I talked at the last Wright meeting about some of the analysis that had been done on the root server attack that happened back in February. John Christoph has done quite a bit more work on this and presented that at the last ORC meeting, so I thought I'd share that with you a little bit. You know, what I will say is this is John's work that I'm presenting. All that ORC has done is facilitated the gathering of the data and allowed John to do this analysis. Despite some of the stuff that happened in the appeared in the press, it was only actually FG, L, and M routes that were attacked. For some reason, there was also some info server, .info servers attacked, and there was also a botnet as part of the target as well. So maybe that gives some insight into the motivation of the people doing it. Done quite a bit of analysis in terms of where it all came from. Again, mostly South Korea, quite a lot from the US, various other places. But note that that's the actual IP addresses that were seen. Clearly the amount of traffic depended on the actual infrastructure that these were connected to. The CNC for the botnet was in the US. The bots located it using the DNS. It didn't go away until late May. Nobody's quite sure why they did this, but it looks like it was some kind of test or demonstration of strength. There's a bit more detail in John's slide deck that I referred to. Another area that a number of ORC members have been working on is the whole problem of open recursive resolvers. You may recall about a year and a half ago, there was an attack which used DDNS queries to amplify the attack via open resolvers. People have been trying to figure out just how big the problem is, and all the efforts to analyze it suggest that actually there is a very big problem, that there are potentially millions of open recursive resolvers sitting out there in the internet, an accident waiting to happen. So again, John's been doing some analysis in this. Two or three other individuals and their organizations who are ORC members have also been working on this. It seems like a pretty scary problem, and it seems like the kind of scary problem that ORC's in a position to do something about. So what we're doing is, at the moment, well, what we're good at is allowing data sharing, plenty of disk space. So basically, we're allowing those people who are working in open recursive resolvers to upload their data to the ORC RAID server. And then it's there for shared analysis. So if you're interested in doing analysis on this kind of data, let me know. If you're interested in providing data, that'd be more welcome. And there's some work's been done on visualizing the actual size of the problem. Over the past couple of days, I had an idea. So this is just a run it up the flagpole job, which is talking and listening to presentations on Sunday from various registries. It's clear that something that is a major worry for DNS operators who run WHOIS registries, particularly ccTLDs, but also gTLDs and others, including RIRs, is that there's constant data mining going on via WHOIS. Most registries, there's a very strong expectation that they provide WHOIS service on TCP port 43. So it's not like they can turn this away. In general, the only response is just to provide the best possible service. Some people do traffic shaping. That requires a bit of resources and management. But it's very difficult to tell what are the valid WHOIS queries from legitimate paying registrars who were just doing this as part of the service versus the complete botnets that are just drilling away to gather as much data as possible. And it occurred to me that, well, maybe, again, most of the registries that operate this appear to collect the source IP addresses of the queries. Perhaps if they were to summarize or otherwise upload that data to ORC, we could do some analysis of that and potentially use that, possibly correlate that data with other botnet data and actually help differentiate between the legitimate queries and the non-legitimate queries and take defensive measures. So this is just an idea. I've talked to one or two people about it. I'd be interested to know if people think this is a good idea or a bad idea, whether this is something that they think they could get value from or would like to help with. Also just briefly wanted to say about DNSCAP. This is a new tool that Paul Vixey has written, and it's like a DNS version of TCP dump. So it does a whole bunch of things that TCP dump won't, which are very useful when you're capturing DNS packets off the wire. There's been various iterations of this. My colleague Chihuahua was currently has the token for finishing this off, I think. So you can get the source of that from the CVS repository on the ORC web server. Feedback on the DNS operations list is still welcome, but what Paul wants to do now is basically draw a line under DNSCAP and expand the tool set that it's part of as part of another project that ISC is working on. Again, at previous DNS working group presentations, I've mentioned the Day in the Life of the Internet project. The idea is to gather as much data over a 48-hour period of the internet as possible. We've worked with CADA, who last I spoke to them, in touch with them yesterday. They haven't burned down yet, but I think it's a pretty new thing. DNS data gathered via ORC is one part of this. We'll be doing it again in January 2008. We had good participation from Root and AS112 server operators last year. We didn't get much in the way of TLD data. So if you think that you can run TCP dump for 48 hours and some scripts to upload it to our server in January, be very welcome. Be good to hear from you on that. Nearly done. As I said, meetings next Friday and Saturday. Still plenty of space to register if you're going to be in Los Angeles. Again, if the place doesn't burn down meantime. Mention the DITL staff, please contact me. I want in the very near future to recruit a dedicated ORC engineer so that we can do a bit more in-house development. And in particular to develop the collection of tools that we use to enable trusted communication. And also there are various people who are developing the DSC software that we use to upload and summarize data. We're going to have a bit more discussion at the meeting next week to try and coordinate that. That's it. That's how you can get in touch with me. Very happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Keith. Any questions? And please, I forgot to mention, this is the European Union, so the government is interested in every breath you take. Please state your name when you go to the microphone.
Oh, yeah, sorry, just one other thing. I apologize for my presentation not being uploaded to the ROSI web server. Both the network interfaces on my laptop died this morning, so I'll try and fix that as soon as I can.
It will be uploaded and will then be available through the usual access after the meeting is over.
Yeah, right? And this presentation is available on the ORC website now. If you go to the public ORC.net, you can find the slides there.
Okay, great. Joao.
Chalam, as ISC, since you mentioned DSNSCAP and maybe having the token to finish it, finished the discussions with Paul last night, He's going to release a new version today.
Okay.
So if you want to play with it, it's really nice tool. If you used to use using DNSCAP, TCP dump for analyzing DNS traffic, this is much better because it actually understands about DNS and presents it in a good format. And this will be the final step of DNSCAP, and then we'll move to
So this version 1.0 at last?
Yeah. And the next step is NCAP, which has the property of reassembling fragments, which which is important with the DNS.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, Keith. And next speaker is Lars-Göran Forsberg, who will talk about BindDLZ. Will he? Where's my speaker? Okay, well, some yeah, packet loss. Okay, well, that's hard. Now I need to be flexible, and the next speaker in line is asked to be as well. Is Ruri Hiromi in the room? Great. Could you give the presentation on V6 Glue and experiences with various registrars? Strange.
Good morning. My name is Ruri Hiromi from Japanese R&D company, and I am also a member of WIDE project and steering IPv6 fix project as a working group. I am very glad to have a chance to give my presentation at LIBE meeting. Today, I will give you a short talk about V6 name server registration. At the first, I show you what happens in the real world, then talk about the situation of registries and registrars. At the last, I present my opinions. In this summer, our company got stable IPv6 connectivity, and we set up IPv6 name server with our own domain zone. Then ask our registrar how to register with our name server into .com name tree. But they didn't answer me. It started almost 4 months ago, but I still waiting for their answer. So I don't know why they couldn't do that. And I want to know what can I do for proceeding this registration. So, and I have another domain name, such like v6fix.net, and that may happen in the another domains. And here is the picture of the condition of GTLD registrar and registries. Sorry, this is too small to see, but there are about 20 registries for GTLD namespace. I'm not sure, but the namespace seems to be still growing. Each GTLD namespace has a lot of registrars under the registry. The total number of the organization named GTLD registrar is almost 1,000. In the summer when I counted. And I have a little survey with GTLD registries with sending emails to the public contact, but only little of them answer to me with answering to be or but no plan, or something suggested me that this kind of question should be to the ICANN. So within this survey, I could say the registries don't know much about their registrar's service conditions. I also found from ICANN's website there are some documents about contract between registries and registrars, but some of them would not be updated yet. First of all, it is difficult to contact all of the registrars and registries to fix situation with bottom-up process. For my summary of this problem, the problem itself seems to be into two parts. The one, the registrar has no application scheme with IPv6 name servers. At the second, no procedures between a registry and registrars. So I have three requests to all of you. The one, make consensus among registries and registrars for building a delegation scheme with V6 server into their name zone. Two, provide user interface for registration of V6 related resource records at registrars. At the last, make some frame for understanding of registries and registrars' status for this preparation. I mean, some kind of statistics of the V6 preparation should be to the public. And we can have another choice with technical approach. For example, a name server can be resolved with V4A resource record, so that if the name server can give a hint that it has a V6 related resource record, it might be solved. Or the very classical way, just simply distribute host file among V6 servers. But I wonder, is this correct solution? That's it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Rumi. Any question or responses? Any registrars in the room would like to comment on that, on their ability to support V6 glue, for example? Anyone else encountered similar problems, like trying to register V6 servers and not getting through? So you all went through registering your V6 servers?
What is V6?
Who's still with me?
Olaf Kolokon, NLNet. Now you ask, and you're not getting any hands. What I wonder is how many people in the room actually run name servers on V4, and how many of them do run name servers also on V6? Because if you don't run your name servers on V6, it's not very relevant to register.
Okay, thank you, Olaf, for rephrasing my question. So how many of you are actually running a name server on V6? Wow. How many of these are second level only? So non-TLD name servers. Okay. And how many of those were able to register their respective glue records with that particular TLD? That's not much of a difference, right? Okay, Joao?
Joao, that was IC operator of FFroot. Yeah, my name server has V6. Try as I might, I cannot get the V6 record into the zone.
Yeah, please complain to the internet government. Okay, I have a question for you, Rumi.
Yes.
So you were blocked of getting the quad A record as a glue record into the com org or whatever zone. Still, I assume that you're seeing couple of queries still coming in on V6, right?
Right.
Okay, so this is not so much about completely blocking V6, but less of an encouragement. So you'd like to just see more registrars be aware of this?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Any more questions? George?
George Michelson, and this is, again, just personal observations. This is not any affiliated position. I feel that this is one of those edge and core moments, because you are to some extent in an edge position and you are trying to live the dream, or you're exploring the dream, and you're saying, I am in six states, six matters to me, I want to be enabled for six, and I need you, an agency and infrastructure, to talk to me about six responsibly. It's not working. And that's an interesting situation for us to be in, and it poses an interesting question. Where does the obligation lie? And registrars and registries, it is a relationship of obligation. There are obligations that are placed on registrars to require them to behave in certain ways. Mm-hmm. CRISP, who is, for instance, there was quite a lot of energy put into putting obligations on them to think about stuff here. So I would say, intellectually, it's not unreasonable to ask the question, should these people be required to respect some behaviours about people living a dream on the edge? The problem I have is that the connectivity issues that relate to service delivery in six and glue in six and testing reachability in six come back to the lack of connectivity. That most procedures that would be high-end procedures around accepting six-related information are going to fail. Attempts to validate are going to fail because the connectivity is poor, and that places them in a very difficult position. What are you meant to do if someone tries to register six glue, and when you do attempts to verify reachability, you, the registrar, cannot reach the six glue they're trying to register in your system? What are you meant to do? I don't know, but I think it is an interesting question. Edge problem, core responsibility, yeah. How do we fix this? I don't know.
So I know the relationship between registry and the registrars, and some people working for the registry as a registrars send me an email that's saying that's the marketing problem, the number of V6 users. But I think the DNS is a social infrastructure, part of social infrastructure, so that we should have preparation for the V6 environment. And of course, we have a connectivity problem. So what can I do? That's a problem. I realize that.
Yeah, okay, thanks. One last question.
You are welcome to register a Czech domain. You can have a V6 glue.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rumi.
Uri,
and okay, so we've postponed the Bind DLZ presentation until the end of the meeting, and probably we could just continue with a report about DNSSEC in Japan, if I may put the presenter on the spot and on stage. Do you need your laptop? Or?
Yeah.
Please wait.
Sorry for delay. Hello everyone. My name is Kentaro Mori. I'm from JPRS. First of all, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I was originally a programmer of .jp registry system, and recently I'm in charge of DNSSEC deployment program in .jp. And recently I'm in charge of, through the project, I obtained some result which I want to share with you. So today I'm going to talk about it as a brief introduction to DNSSEC, brief introduction to JPRS DNSSEC implementation research for JL. Sorry, a little wrong. And so, I altered the title of presentation so that it is actually the same presentation as what I did in center meeting. So I restart to original title. And the content of the presentation as follows. First, I give you some backgrounds of JPRS. Then I may explain our requirements in our research. Then I'll give some design concepts of our prototype system and its implementation. After that, I'll show you some of the performances of it. Finally, I'll introduce our field test and its results using the prototype. This is our background. As for the current .jp, we have almost a million domain names. And we conduct frequent updates of .jp DNS by every 15 minutes. The updates are synchronized to 30 .jp DNS servers, which includes IP and Ecast servers as well as standby servers. At this point, we have some issue regarding to implement DNSSEC. Because to sign with existing tools such as DNSSEC sign zone, DNSSEC sign zone took a longer time than our update interval. Under our condition, it took more than 20 minutes. So JPRS decided to create a prototype system as an R&D project to solve this problem. Here is a frequent DNS update scheme of the current .jp. Every 15 minutes, we export all zone data from our registry database. Then we reload the .jp DNS master server and using XPerform differences create incremental data, essentially comparing two whole zone data and transfer to the data to .jp DNS secondary servers. Obviously, it has bottlenecks against the further frequency and creating DNSSEC related resource records such as NSSEC or NSSEC3. So I defined our main requirements of the R&D project as follows. First is the ability of large zone administration up to 10 million domain names. Second is rapid updates. In our research, we defined the data update frequency as 1 minute and the desired elapsed time of 100 domain update as 10 seconds. Next one is for reliable synchronization of zone data. We defined it as the ability of checking delay time of data synchronization from registry system to DNS and ability of checking zone data integrity of zone servers. And of course, DNSSEC capability. It is required to be compliant to RFCs and NSEC 3. In addition, the ability of key management is also required. Considering the requirements, I define the design concept for the prototype implementation as follows. First, its integration to the current registry system should be easy enough to deploy efficiently. For the concept, the design was made so that there were least changes to the registry system and DNSSEC-related features are provided by the prototype implementation outside the registry system. Second, for the rapid update of the large zone, RR set extraction from registry data database and DNS signing should be made in an incremental way. Third, data integrity of DNS server should be checked without service interruption. In a service situation, there must be a timing when the DNS server has some delay from registry database, but still we should have ability to check its data consistency. That's my design. And the system of the prototype consists of four parts. Zone distribution system and integrity checking tools are the products of this R&D. This is a system diagram of the prototype. .jp registry system pushes the updated data, updated domain to zone distribution system. Then zone distribution system performs incremental data extraction and DNSSEC signing, and incremental zone data synchronization to DNS servers. Push updated domain name, domain name, and by the domain name, increment the data extraction and the transfer. Here, I'll explain some details of the prototype components. Zone distribution system is intended to work as an intelligent box between registry system and DNS servers. It performs incremental data extraction from .jp registry system, zone data distribution to DNS servers using AXFAR or AXFAR, and zone data management. The zone data management makes possible to obtain any SOS serial number of zone data from zone distribution system for integrity check without service interruption. The DNSSEC features are described in the next slide. We developed this component from scratch using Java, and it uses PostgreSQL or Oracle or HSQL as its backend database. DNSSEC features of zone distribution systems are follows. It is compliant to both of NSEC and NSEC 3. On system initialization, it creates ZSK and signs RR set for all domains in the registry database. And it performs incremental signing according to the updates on registry database. And it has also semi-automatic ZSK rollover and re-signing mechanism. Here, semi-automatic means that KSK private key needs to attach to the system manually for each time by security reason. And at the re-signing, all keys and RRCs are deleted after appropriate time considering their TTLs. And here are the details of the integrity checking tools. Zone synchronization latency check tool measures update latency of each DNS server from distribution system, zone distribution system, by its SOA serial number, and checks if the latency is in allowable time frame. It is designed for frequent and write-write checking. Full data integrity check tool verifies zone data synchronization between zone distribution system and each DNS server. It obtains complete zone data from each DNS server and compares with corresponding zone data in zone distribution system. It is designed for periodic and comprehensive checking. Here is the update performance of the prototype system comparing with the current system. They were measured in our unit test in the case of adding 100 domains to a zone of 1 million domains with DNSSEC signing. Using DNSSEC sign zone, the current .jp registry system took 25 minutes for the update, while the prototype system needed only 10 seconds. It was far better than the current system. And as I said before, we performed some field test of the prototype system. In a test, we check the DNS update latency from .jp registry database change and data integrity of DNS servers after a long time running. But unfortunately, there was a serious bug related to DNSSEC feature at that time, and we had no time. So we couldn't perform this test with DNSSEC signing. In the test, we connected zone distribution system to the real.jp registry system for 1 month in the condition of pulling out updated data every minute from .jp registry database. And the DNS servers were placed in Tokyo and New York only for the internal test. We simulate queries from a.dns.jp query log, which is one of the .jp secondary DNS, so that they had the same load as the real .jp DNS servers. This is the schema of the field test. We attach the prototype system to the real system, and the extraction of the update data was made by every minute. At the same time, the sudo.jp servers were loaded by replaying the same query to .jp secondary DNS, as I mentioned. System integration needed for the field test as follows. The modification to the real.jp registry system is to add an RDBMS trigger to .jp registry database, which generates updated domain names list. This is the only modification to the registry system. And then, to obtain incremental data from .jp registry database according to the list, we wrote data import Java class of zone distribution system. It was easy to integrate relatively. The results of the field test were acceptable for us. As an average, update latency of DNS from .jp registry system was 2 seconds. We couldn't perform DNSSEC signing at this test, but if it were done, it would take 5 seconds or so, I guess. More importantly, there was no data inconsistency after 1 month running. So there are conclusions. JPRS developed incremental data processing mechanism of .jp registry updates, including DNSSEC signing key management features as zone distribution system, and result of the field test satisfied .jp TLD requirements of large zone, rapid updates, and reliable synchronization. So that's all for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Olaf Kloppman, Anelnet Labs. I am incredibly impressed by this work. Very nice. Thank you for presenting it.
Well, thank you very much.
I have two questions, or one question and one remark. The software you have, is that publicly available?
Yes. I'm thinking of releasing it as an open software, but it depends on my company's decision. So it's only my will.
I would think it would be very valuable to have this available to the general public, and that brings me to my remark. I am aware of several initiatives of people who try to tie their provisioning system to put DNSSEC into their provisioning systems.
Yes,
and
I
I'm also aware of several efforts to write code, and I think that one of the things that is problematic, that there is not a one-stop place to get that software. If you were to publish this code, the only place I can think of where people would be able to find it fast would be via a portal, dnssec.net, and I'm not quite sure if it's kosher to plug that portal, but if you release your software, I would actually contact that site and try to get a link from there so that people can actually find it. Mm-hmm. And also get a link from the DNSSEC deployment .org website.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm pleased to hear that.
Okay, thank you very much, Kentaro. I also think seeing an implementation that actually already deals with NSX 3, I like very much, even personally. Thanks for the presentation. Oh. And I'm sorry. All the presentations that have not yet been uploaded will be uploaded and will then be made available through the RIPE website. So it's just a matter of dealing with the laptops there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks again. Okay, then with a slight change in schedule, I'd like to ask Lars-Göran Forsberg to the microphone and give his presentation about BindDLZ. I guess the slides were already uploaded, right?
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
Check the name. I know the name on the
This is the name.
Yeah, it's the bottom one.
It's the bottom, yes.
Okay. Hello, my name is Lars-Göran Forsberg, and I am here because I have been asked to have a talk about BindDLZ. Who am I? I am the registrar manager of a small web hosting company from Sweden that deals with web shared hosting and DNS hosting. I mainly work with the development of DNS services and the contact with registry registrars for top domains and TLDs. The outline of this presentation is that I will give you a short introduction to BindDLZ. I guess most of you have heard about it or even maybe tried to use it, but not many is using it in a production environment. I'll try to give you a background of my experience so you know what this presentation is coming from, and then I'll move on to the more question-like parts of the presentation, like is BindDLZ up for consideration when you choose a new DNS server software? Is it production stable? What pros and cons does it have? And I'll try to emphasize that when dealing with BindDLZ, it's really all about the system design. I'll try to give you some of the an insight into some of the trials and errors we had when we first started using the software, and I'll give you an example, a running example. Then I think we will have some time for questions. BindDLZ is actually an extension to Bind. It's own storage backend that basically, yeah, extends the functionality of Bind. It was a separate software up until the Bind release 9.4, and the DLZ part actually stands for dynamically loadable zones. So it makes you able to insert, modify, or delete records in your zone data without restarting or reloading the server. And it can use a wide selection of database backends. I will go into a couple of them later on in the presentation. Well, the background of my experience. I've been using BindDLZ in a production environment for 3 years running with about 250,000 zones. And we have about 100,000 unique customers that is depending on the service. I also have some experience with using Bind9 for running DNSSEC services as the .se zone is signed, and we are a registrar of .se. And I have had the pleasure to design services with the BindDLZ as counterpart. So, is BindDLZ up for consideration when you are choosing a new DNS service software? Well, it all comes down to what you intend to do. How many zones do you think you will have in the end? What kind of update frequency will they have? Will your customers want to update their data like once every minute or like never? And how many queries per second do you want your DNS service to be able to deliver? Well, I can actually answer a few of them right away by saying if you have more than a few thousand of zones, then BindDLZ really is for you. And it may not be the one thing your local root server operator is looking for, because the reason of having the ability to reload one zone isn't really big. So, the pros and cons of BindDLZ. I would definitely start with saying provisioning, because BindDLZ software really makes your life easy coming to provisioning, as it uses a database backend. You have the good thing about you don't really have any downtime, because you actually never need to reload or restart the server, and it's really quick if you do, because of the backend configuration. The slight con of BindDLZ may be the performance. It's not NSD, it's not vanilla Bind, but for the service you are building, do you really need it? when I go out talking to people about buying DLZ, reading about DLZ, I often get the question, is Bind DLZ really production stable? Yeah, hell yeah. It's in Bind 9.4. It is used. We are using it. And we don't have any problems of the magnitude that needs to be directly addressed. And I think that most problematic experiences that are reported is due to a bad system design. If you look at it this way, if a system designer is installing a Bind DLZ installation and using a direct MySQL connection each query, he would rather be on his way to the loony bin than writing a report about it, because you're not going to get any kind of performance out of that. As I said, it's all about system design when dealing with Bind DLZ. If you use it the wrong way, it won't work, as with most systems. And some development is needed in-house often, but it does pay out. So, when we started to use Bind DLZ, we had a few tests made, we started off with different database backends. We tried a direct connection to MySQL, MySQL, and found it to be a very slow solution. No effective local cache, so you would have to get the answer for the query from the database each time you get the question. The only real good thing about using a direct connection is that the updates you do is fast. They will be in the database as soon as you add them there and shown in the zone. We basically had the same experience with LDAP. Slow, because you're still using a TCP/IP connection to make the query happen, and there's still no effective local cache, and you still have the good thing about fast updates. As soon as the data is in the database, it's shown in the zone. But with LDAP, we actually experienced random crashes in the driver for the DNS service backend. I don't really know why, and we tried to look at the problem, but never really got to fixing it. Instead, we went with the Berkeley database and used a master data source. I will explain to you exactly how we're using it in a few minutes. This solution made the Bind DLZ installation fast. It gave us moderate speed updates, so every time we read data from the master data source to the local Berkeley databases, we get an update. And we have a stable DNS service. The second thing is the performance tuning of Bind DLZ. I think it's easy to say that no system is alike. You will need to performance tune differently than us or anyone else, depending on how many zones you have, how many zones are actually active, how many zones will be loaded from cache, or how many zones will be read from the disk. You can actually go two ways here. You can play with the Berkeley database internal cache to tune, or you can put the entire database in a memory file system to get some nice performance. We went with the cache size tuning, and the standard size of the cache is 256 kilobytes, and that gave us just about 45% cache hit rate, which is quite low. You will probably have to find the best cache size for you, what gives you the highest percentage and what's not ridiculously high. To take an example, Lupia DNS, the service that we offer, it's a free DNS service. You get one account, you have multiple domains. It features a DNS editor where you can add your records, delete your records, modify your records of different kinds. It also features a bulk edit so that you can maybe edit 10 records for 5,000 domain names with somewhere about 10 clicks. that's a stress test for provisioning. DNS system design. We use one master data source that holds all sound data, all domain names, all subdomains, and that's MySQL version 5 server, which basically has a trigger telling our system what domain names have been updated. We then use a replication agent that reads all changes from the MySQL database to the local Berkeley databases on the DNS servers. That runs once every minute. And we have, as said, a Berkeley database local on each NS node with a 10 megabyte cache as the local data source of the actual part of WineDeal said. To show you a little graphical presentation of the system, on top we have the MySQL server containing the actual data. Then we have the replication agent that is installed on each NS node. One thing to note here is that we only have NS masters. All servers are configured as masters. We do not use zone transfers. So each DNS server is exactly alike. There's not really anything more to say about that right now, so I'll go over to some performance numbers. The performance tests we do actually kind of often is use our regular Dell servers with 2 gigabytes of memory and dual core Intel processors, and we replay 1 week of DNS queries to the servers. And with the kind of customers we have, we get a 95% cache hit rate. Basically, it reads 95% of the queries from the memory instead of the disk. We have a 3% disk usage and 185% processor usage. And it gives us about 10,000 queries per second per server. So that's just about what you can get from BindDeal said. That's what I had to say to you today. Please ask questions, and if you think of something after the presentation, then send me an email.
Thank you very much. So we seem to have questions.
Otman Edel from Nick.at. Question, how does this thing compare to PowerDNS?
Well, it's an odd question because I've never used it, the counterpart.
Vladislav, Emirates Telecommunication.
Yeah.
Why you moved away from this master-slave concept? Do you see any advantages in running all the servers as a master?
Well, I don't really see an advantage, and I don't really see a disadvantage. When we went with BindDeal said, we actually thought that having the same setup for each server is a good thing. Say if we want to go do any casting, it would be easy to set up because you have the provisioning agent on each server. There's no dependencies on connectability between the servers. And
I was considering the solution, or I was thinking about the solution as well. My idea was mostly to run a hidden master with the DLC backend and have the front end normal stable bind and using the zone transfer. So That's why I ask, you know, if there is any advantage or disadvantage, because as you said in the beginning, the stability was somehow questionable, or maybe earlier, maybe it's not the case today, but
no,
is there any advantage really, or this was the point?
Well, I'm not going to say that using zone transfers is bad, but it's a bit 80s. I really can't define any problems with using the solution you're suggesting, because it does still work, but I think you won't get the dependability on the update rate and so on, depending on how many updates you have. Say that we have 250,000 domain names and we want to update 5,000 of them. If we use the provisioning agent, we know that it's going to take less than a minute.
Because you have a hosting company, right? You do this huge update, maybe.
Yeah, we do. We have huge accounts as customers. We have, say, a customer with 10,000 domain names in one account, and he goes into a bulk editor and makes a change for each one, and that gives you, if you go with.
I see your point. I have one more question about this MySQL and Berkeley database. Why are you using both? Is it because of your provisioning system? Is handling MySQL better or?
Basically, the MySQL part is not a part of the bind deal set. It's the thing we use for provisioning. It makes it a whole lot of easier to handle.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Olaf Kolkman, Nelnet Labs. You asked for disadvantages. One of the things that I can think of is that you have not many variation in your name server setup, which means that if there are bugs, your whole setup is vulnerable.
Yeah, that is actually a valid point, which Jim Reed pointed out to me in the late spring this year. So we are actually looking at when we move out to several sites, we are going to have different hardware, we are going to have different OS, and we're going to have some other DNS server that works through a zone transfer. It's going to be done because of the problem that we got stated.
Thank you. I have another question for you. So you said you can serve up to, like, I guess 10,000 queries per second with your particular setup.
Yeah, per server.
Compared to what performance not using the bind DLZ? Did you make the comparison?
Yeah, actually we went with performance numbers stated by the developers of each other DNS server software. We have been running regular bind 9 before with better performance if we push it, but the difference, I don't have that numbers in my head.
Okay, but the potential performance decrease is then not significant to you. Although, of course, the whole performance thing depends on the actual query pattern you see, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We measured what we needed, and we took something like 100 times that and went with it, and it should be okay. We basically have, say, at peaks today, say we have 3,000 queries per second as a need, and that's divided on all our four DNS servers. So it's 3 of 40,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Another question from me, Otman Edel, Nikkei. What was your main motivation for going for a DLZ here? Is it the changes within existing domains, or is it adding new domains to a server? Which kind of type of change made you go for that system?
Well, I must say both. We went for this system because we know we were going to have lots of customers in it, and we did not want to reload the servers like every minute or every 5 minutes. Basically, I would say the updates made us the updates for existing domain name made us go for this one.
Olaf? Okay. Thank you, Lars.
Thank you.
That's it, I guess. Okay.
And with that, I guess we've come to the final part of today's session, which is any other business.
For that, I'm going to use this mic because I want to talk this direction. Olaf Kollekman and Nelnet Labs. As you know, we developed we develop DNS software of various kinds. And currently, we're working on a project called Unbound in collaboration with VeriSign and Nominet. It's a recursive caching forwarder name server with DNSSEC, which is DNSSEC aware. It is now at a stage where we want to slowly have an expanding set of people who test the software. And so this is a call for volunteers and also a promise that at the next RIPE meeting we will give a presentation on the thing called Unbound. But if you are interested in starting to use Unbound in your environment on a very small scale at first, say in your R&D department or something, and maybe later at a somewhat larger scale, and maybe even be one of the first to deploy this on realistic production scales, that please contact us because we need to see what is happening in the wild. For authoritative name servers, it's easy. You follow the specs and things will be good. But for recursive name servers, you're sitting behind all kinds of boxes which do weird things to your packets and you want to see what happens in the wild. And that's why we need help from people who turn on their Unbound behind those weird systems, so to speak. If you're interested, contact me or Wouter. Wouter, raise your hand, please. Wouter is one of the developers of Unbound, and help us. Thanks.
Thank you, Olaf. Any other business? Okay, then I only have the pleasure of having the final other business, and that is thanking all the speakers, especially thanking all the speakers for tightly sticking to the schedule. Thanks to RIPE-NCC staff, Razvan for technical support, Adrian for taking the minutes, and as usual, I guess they will be ready almost after the meeting. Oh, not challenging you, sorry about that. So we will circulate the draft minutes as soon as we get them for approval on the mailing list. Thank you all for coming, and see you next time in Köln at RIPE 56. Goodbye.